Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
I think it's just the resilient nature of the people that are in agriculture in general.
Britt Coker is a diversified producer in West Texas, president of the Spring Lake Earth Cotton Growers.
There's hard days, no doubt about it. And these aren't the best of times in agriculture, unfortunately. But I just think, if we just keep our head down and keep after it, the good things are, going to come. Sometimes you kind of wonder, but, it's kind of a group effort as well. You know, when you communicate with other farmers and you work with industry groups like Plains Cotton Growers, you just try to keep the positive aspect on it and, just keep grinding. That's kind of what I know what to do. But there is it's definitely a tricky time for sure.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It is good for ag.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX. Headlines are that India may soon be the first nation to strike a bilateral trade deal with the U.S. under the reciprocal tariff policy, and that's according to U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
We've had a series of cabinet members who have come out also and made statements about, well, we're close to an agreement with Japan, we're close to an agreement with this country or that country. And we know that there were 14 different meetings set up with different countries for negotiation this week alone. We know that the European Union indicated in statements today that we want an agreement with the United States. Now the Trump administration actually needs to produce an agreement, and China right now is betting that it will be rewarded for holding fast by Trump losing support of Congress and them clipping his wings in this, and they won't have to concede anything to change that momentum, to pull China in. Trump really needs to see some successes on the negotiation front, and while they may be having some successes, they're not being really public at this point. We need to have an actual completed deal. And as you said, that takes time, but we need an announcement of a significant trade deal with one of our major trading partners, hopefully a couple of them. That would give the momentum to help get support in the markets. That helps get the consumer and/or the voter, if we should say a different way, supportive as well to see that positive momentum. And I think that would help with China. But until that happens, I think China is going to hold fast, and we're going to see continued criticism in the media and from even some of the president's own party. That's what China is counting on.
Part of the challenge with China is finding out where the truth is. White House says U.S. and China holding talks on Thursday. Chinese foreign minister says no.
So I've talked to our people from China, native China, and their daily conversations. Well, one of them still living in China, and their daily conversations with people in China. What they tell me is that President Xi Jinping has built a real strong sense of nationalism right now inside of China. Remember, they control the message there. And they have told the people that it's the United States who has unfair trade practices and that has been the big bully in the world, and that the United States has declared war on China. And so it's time to sacrifice, kind of like we did here in the United States in World War II, talking about sacrifice for the good of the cause, so to speak, even though there's no missiles and bullets flying here. That's the kind of wording that is being used. And Xi Jinping has isolated himself and eliminated people from his circle who don't agree with him. So that means people are kind of afraid to tell him maybe the news he needs to hear. So Xi Jinping is enjoying some of his strongest public support right now by standing up to the United States. And he would be risking that if he actually agreed to negotiate, unless it could happen in a way that makes him look strong. So that's why I don't expect to see anything anytime soon with them, unless there's a way that we can get a trade agreement that still allows him to look strong back home, because that's the way he looks to their people right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We project, and that includes the pause, we project that global merchandise trade volumes will decline by 0.2% in 2025, nearly 3 percentage points below the level we would have expected without recent trade policy shifts.
Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala is the Director General of the World Trade Organization.
This downward revision reflects the combined impact of newly introduced tariffs and heightened uncertainty affecting trade relations with the United States. However, there are downside risks. A reinstatement of reciprocal tariffs would shave 0.6 percentage points off this forecast, lowering the projected growth rate to minus 0.8%. This is almost the 1 percentage point contraction we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Now, a broader spread of policy uncertainty beyond U.S. trading relationships would reduce growth by another 0.7 percentage points, implying a total decline in global merchandise trade of 1.5% percentage points in 2025 if both downside risks materialize, i.e. the risk of reinstating reciprocal tariffs and also growing uncertainty spreading beyond the U.S. Then I would like to make a few points. The first is on China-U.S. decoupling, which is a phenomenon that is really worrying to me. Beneath these, the global figures I just quoted, lies a sharp projected decline in U.S.-China bilateral trade. We currently estimate that merchandise trade between the economies will fall, the two economies will fall by 81%, a drop that would have reached 91% without recent exemptions for products such as smartphones. So without the smartphones, 91%, with that exemption, 81%. And this level of a drop in U.S.-China trade of the magnitudes we are talking about is virtually tantamount to a decoupling of the two economies. With this, whilst U.S.-China trade accounts for only around 3% of world merchandise trade, a decoupling between the two major economies could have far-reaching consequences if it were to contribute to a broader fragmentation of the global economy along geopolitical lines into two isolated blocs. Our estimates suggest that global real GDP would be lowered by nearly 7% in the long term. This is quite significant and substantial. The welfare losses would be in double digits for many developing economies, which is very worrying. So this is a phenomenon we've talked about before, that we're worried about this fragmentation, and now we're seeing it emerging, and I think this is one of the most worrying factors for us. I want to make a point next on the impact on least developed countries. LDCs are particularly vulnerable to current trade policy risks. Among the 10 economies facing the highest reciprocal tariffs, 5 are least developed countries. Some may see short-term gains by filling the gap left by Chinese exports to the U.S., but a reinstatement of reciprocal tariffs could carry severe consequences. Rather than raising barriers, this could be a moment to offer least developed countries some reprieve by exempting them from new tariffs and reinforcing their fragile integration into the global economy. Exempting LDCs from all tariff increases would raise their exports, support their growth, and in essence help to create new markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Pretty resilient markets.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
So with that kind of framework, really some of the commonalities that the grains and oilseeds have been dealing with have been some of the macro events, clearly the tariff thing and how it's going to be working its way through that market, through those marketplaces over the next few months, if not a few years. We'll see how that plays out. A relatively weaker dollar, which should be friendly for all three of those markets. The dollar's been on a pretty darn good slide and doesn't seem to be showing any kind of willingness to start to bottom out anyway. So that's definitely one thing. And then also the managed money has been palms in buying corn, wheat, and soybeans. Now, for corn and for soybeans, they might be adding to longs, whereas for wheat, they're reducing their shorts. So keep that in mind. So you got the spec money coming in buying. You got a relatively friendly dollar scenario at the moment. The big gray cloud is going to be tariffs and what's going to happen over the longer term. And then if you dig into each one of those individually, I guess we'll start with wheat. The weather scenario has been improving for the hard red winter wheat crop areas. There has been some increase in global competition. And on the flip of that, in terms of some bullish scenarios, we've got that, like I said, the weaker U.S. dollar and the spec funds also buying there. So in terms of rain in particular, the hard red winter wheat areas got some decent precipitation. Central Oklahoma, northern Texas, eastern Kansas. So that's a good thing for that market in terms of development. On the flip side of that, though, is the soft red winter wheat area where it might be a little bit excessive rainfall, so we'll see how that works its way into that crop. The Russian wheat production, if we look internationally, Sovcon raised its forecast for Russia's wheat crop, as it deems that it was a little bit more resilient than had been expected through some of the adverse weather that it's seen. We're getting strong competition from the Black Sea region. So that's definitely a couple of the bearish aspects for wheat and maybe why it's been struggling relatively in terms of the action that we saw with soybeans and corn. As for corn, we saw that precipitation is generally helpful, although it could cause some delays in planting. It did alleviate the drought, so that's a good thing. Export sales have been really robust. They've been strong, reaching about a two-month high recently. So clearly there's value in our corn. In terms of international conditions, especially down in South America, Brazil's safrinha, that second season corn crop, they received some favorable moisture, so that's a bit of a headwind there. And then Argentina's corn harvest is progressing slightly ahead of average, so that's also a bit of a headwind in terms of prices. And for soybeans, really, I think it's some of those same weather events, as I just mentioned, for corn down in South America are factors that work their way into the soybean market. The soybean harvest is nearly complete, about 92%. So that's going to put some downward pressure on prices, although we might see a post-harvest rally. We'll see how things play out there. And Argentina's harvest has been slower. I think it was around 6% versus a 22% average. But now conditions are becoming drier, which is going to facilitate the harvest. So it looks like more supply might be around the corner from Argentina.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I come from a farming family.
Testifying before the Senate Ag Committee in a nomination hearing for Deputy Secretary of Ag, Stephen Vaden.
My father, John Marshall Vaden, was born on a farm in rural Obion County, Tennessee in 1918 and engaged in farming his entire life. Following his death, my brother and I learned that one of the family farms that we had inherited has been in the family since the early 1800s, as it appears in exactly its current dimensions on the original map of Fulton County, Kentucky, with the name of my ancestor handwritten across the plat. It was the profits my father reaped that paved the way for me to come before you here today. Those profits, wisely invested over time, paid for the exorbitant tuition at Vanderbilt University and Yale Law School. They made it possible for me to delay entering the private practice of law in order to clerk for two of our nation's finest federal judges. They supported the move to the more expensive Washington, D.C. area, where I entered the private practice of law, first at the firm of Patton Boggs and then at the firm of Jones Day. I need no refresher course on why low commodity prices are harmful to the futures of rural communities. It has been my reality since birth. Should I be confirmed, I would be entering the department at a time of uncertainty for the producers the department serves. Agriculture is, for the first time in living memory, dealing with a structural trade deficit. The only way out is to open new markets for American producers to sell their crops. As a judge who has served the past 4 years on a court possessing exclusive jurisdiction over most of the United States' trade matters, I hope to bring this experience to bear in advising the Secretary and her team on opportunities to remove trade barriers hindering market access for America's farmers, foresters, and ranchers. America's producers are the most efficient for a reason. They are not afraid of technological progress that has allowed them to produce more food and fiber from a shrinking agricultural footprint. We must ensure their productivity is not turned into a weapon against them that harms their financial futures. I would be remiss if I did not mention that for nearly the entirety of the first Trump administration, I served in the Office of General Counsel. I have told each of my crops of new law clerks that it remains my favorite job that I have ever had to this day. It is a high honor to work with a team dedicated to allowing rural America to thrive once again. And I am grateful that the President and the Secretary have chosen my friend, Tyler Clarkson, to serve as General Counsel in this second administration. I know he will ensure that all USDA does remains on the right side of the law. It is the opportunity to work with Tyler and many of the other wonderful people that I served with in that first term. That's what leads me here today to ask you to allow me to serve once again. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, my father was a farmer. Throughout his life, he was a grocer, an investor, and a real estate developer. But it was the title of farmer of which he was most proud. I know that because he placed that title, farmer, below his name on every check I ever saw him sign. The last three checks he ever signed hang on my judicial chamber's wall, framed as a reminder of the responsibilities that I bear as a federal judge to ensure that all who come before the department and before me are treated fairly, equitably, and in accordance with the law.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It was a drought unlike any that we had seen around here.
West Texas diversified producer Brent Coker on starting to farm in 2011.
Of course, that was my first year farming, so I didn't know. Right? I mean, I did, but I didn't how extreme it was at the time. I just was trying to figure everything out. Fortunately, my dad was still farming at the time with me, so he was there for a few years while we first got started, and then kind of phased out over a few years. But 2011 was rough. It was rough, and honestly, 2012 was not that much better, to be honest.
Coker is president of the Spring Lake Earth Cotton Growers, vice president for Plains Cotton Growers.
We figured out we can't water through a drought in 2011. We tried that year. We'd never seen anything like it. And so we just did what we always have been doing. And that year there wasn't enough water in the world to water through that drought, at least in our area, with our irrigation capacity that we have at this time. So it was a trying year for sure, but we got through it and we're still here. So that's a good thing.
But from 2011 to today, hasn't been a rosy picture for the cotton infrastructure.
The gin infrastructure on the High Plains, we've been through, well, you talk about the droughts in 11 and 12, but then since 2021 was a good year for some. Our gin didn't have a great year that year. And of course, 22, the bale volume was down for everybody. 23 and 24 as well. So we've been through 4 or 5 years here where our bale volume has really taken a hit. So our gins in this area are really, really, really struggling. Gins, just like at grain elevators or anything else, are volume driven. And we've really had to watch our expenses and, you know, there's been some consolidation going on in some of the gins, and it's a really struggle. Hopefully, I know some of the work that we're doing at Plains Cotton Growers is some of the initiatives that we're trying to take right now are specifically catered towards getting some infrastructure help from the federal government, and I certainly hope that comes to fruition. It's been a lot of work on our group and a number of other groups to get something to just incentivize to where our gens can, you know, keep operating on these short production years.
And while consolidation can be beneficial, losing infrastructure in rural communities is devastating.
These little communities, just like what we talked about with these gens, they're solely relying on agriculture pretty much. There's very little other industry in this part of the world besides ag. And so as these farms become bigger and there's just less and less families that are in these small communities, because it just takes more land for one producer to, you know, continue to operate. And so, yeah, unfortunately, these communities are dwindling in size out here, and it's a real shame. But there's still a little bit going on here, and it's been a hopefully Mother Nature will start treating us a little better, and we can start getting a little more production in this part of the world.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The big gray cloud out there in terms of economic uncertainty and recession talk, if not practically going to happen, that's debatable at this point, and how that might work its way into consumer confidence and their spending.
Bob Bowers with Manduca Trading, Chicago.
A little bit of push and pull there, but generally speaking, I think the market looks pretty good. So first of all, we had the cash last week trading in the north between 332 to 335. That's up anywhere from $4 to $7, so pretty darn strong there. In terms of the south, primarily at around 210, that was up $6 week on week, so cash markets are strong. It's going to be better, though, if on the flip side of that, the back end of that, in terms of the box beef prices, that it starts to show some significant gains also. So a bit of a mixed market. You got the input rallying pretty strong, kind of indicating packer demand. But on the back end, in terms of moving it along with higher box beef prices, we're not quite seeing those two jive at the moment. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. As I mentioned, strong export sales, that's a good thing. And then the feeder cattle prices, basically due to limited availability and relatively tight supplies, that continues to push higher. And then also, you just got the general trend of tighter levels, historically speaking, in terms of feeder cattle. In terms of hogs, I think it's a balance between, say, the lower weekly pork production, so actual numbers out there in terms of pounds of pork, a little bit lower, firmer cash market, decent cutout values, funds have been in there showing some optimism with their palms in and buying. And again, similar to cattle, we've got the weaker U.S. dollar. And then there's some seasonal strength around this time of year, particularly in the pork bellies, but also as we're heading into the grilling season. And weather here in Chicago area is going to be in the 70s coming up real soon. So maybe we start to see some additional demand for the grilling. And then on the flip side of that, we've got export sales that have come off a little bit in terms of some of the bearish possibilities working its way into the marketplace, and then also similar to cattle, economic uncertainty and what that's going to do with consumer demand. Dialing into that a bit there, as of the week ending April 19, the pork production number was down versus the previous week and year-ago levels. So again, just less supply out there. Slaughter rates, obviously, a little bit lower. And then firmer cash hog prices, that's been a bullish fundamental working its way into the market with indicative of the packer demand there. And then also, contrary to the cattle market, stronger cutout values. So they're seeing it both maybe paying up on the cash side for the input there, but also getting it on the back end with the higher cutout values. Export markets, like I mentioned, a little bit slower than we'd like. That's been weakening, and probably because of some of the concerns in terms of export sales, but we'll see how that plays out over a longer window, not just in the immediacy here. Managed money, big spec traders are palms in buying. They increased their net long positions in the hog futures by about 10%. So that is a nice bullish element working its way into the price. The packers, like I mentioned, have been aggressively going after the inputs there. And then obviously just looking at the bigger economic and currency factors, you got the weaker U.S. dollar versus those economic concerns like I mentioned at the onset.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The WTO is a venue for dialogue and cooperative action. While this crisis situation for global trade has reminded many governments why they value the stable and predictable market conditions the WTO helps provide, they also see it as an opportunity to improve the WTO and to reposition it to meet new challenges and tackle new issues.
Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala is Director General of the World Trade Organization.
We should seize this chance of the trade crisis we're in to tackle level playing field issues, policy space issues for poor countries to grow, better decision-making processes, and so on and so forth. And we should inject more dynamism into the way the organization works. Our rules were never meant to be set in stone for 30 years. They were meant to be updated and redynamized as needed.